Hey lovelies, welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. My creatives tonight are Chris Baker and James Kattner of the sensual thriller, The Estate. Chris is the writer and star. James is the director of this mind-bending, petty-ass, beautifully shot film. The Estate stars Eliza Coupe, Greg Finley, Heather Matarazzo, Riff Hutton, Ezra Buzzington, and Eric Roberts. This episode is brought to you by Thoroclean Carpet Cleaning. Thoroclean has been serving Central Florida for the last 30 years for all of your carpet, tile, and furniture cleaning, as well as your home or business sanitizing needs. Give Thoroclean a call, 321-729-8198 in the Central Florida area. Grab your cup of coffee or your favorite beverage, cuddle up with your host pup, and enjoy the show. Well, guys, hello.
Hi.
Straight out the gate, this film had me going, oh shit, a couple times, okay? Especially no spoilers, because I don't do the spoilers, but
thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, bro. Yeah.
That twist ending, yeah.
Absolutely. I sat back from my laptop and went, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Well, it worked. So it worked. God, it worked.
Absolutely, it worked.
Okay. You don't feel that very often in movies nowadays, do you?
No. And matter of fact, unfortunately, in a lot of movies, you're sitting there going, yeah, I saw that coming.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You feel like you could have walked out halfway through knowing how it was going to end. But it's sure amazing. Did. And you've got some great people in this film. You've got Eliza Coupe. You got Heather Matarazzo. Eric Roberts, hello. Which, by the way, you resemble him a lot.
That was all James. You know, when I wrote this character from, you know, who would play George's dad, we were thinking of different people and we were hoping we could get kind of a, you know, a really great, fun cameo. And James was like, you know who you look like?
Yeah.
Best of the best. And I, you know, I grew up watching Eric Roberts in The Dark Knight, but also as like the bad guy in all those erotic thrillers,
yeah,
which this borrows elements from the 90s. And so that was, it was such a perfect thing. Mm-hmm. And he was available and he loved the script and he totally got it. And, you know, right, we were so grateful to have him.
I Tarantino'd right. Eric Roberts. I Tarantino'd him.
Absolutely. Tarantino, who? Come on.
Yeah, right. There you go.
I can just imagine like the phone call, like, hey, do you want to be in a film where you like get killed horribly?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in. Totally. Where do I go?
Not his first time. Not his first time.
Right.
Death rodeo.
That's right. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And he was game, you know, he was great. And what a fun, like, kind of, you know, he really brought a awesome energy to this thing. And you know, Chris and I both have musical backgrounds. I talk about this a lot. I think film is a lot about music, you know, and the editing and the pacing of things, and also, you know, all the different instruments. You know, Chris brings his own kind of color and sound, and you know, Eric was just speaking of music, I think the first take we did with Eric, he was supposed to just, I think it was probably that Steadicam shot of him entering the house, and he gets to the foyer and then he just starts scatting. I'm like Eric, okay, this is not taking place in New Orleans, but I like where your head's at, you know, just kind of trying things out. So he was a lot of fun to work with, and all these guys were a blast. And it was indie filmmaking, so obviously it was stressful and incredibly challenging, but you know, we had great material to work with and a bunch of great people in front of and behind the camera, so
right, absolutely. And as an indie film, you have that measure of control that you don't have a lot of times when you're working with a bigger studio.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and you know, and I'll let Chris talk to that as well. But I think that working within the sandbox, you know, we yielded some of the best results, I think, that you see on screen, you know. And I remember when Netflix, you know, was just started to pour money, you know, at these projects with all these amazing gifted auteurs. You know, I think that sometimes you see a little bit of the bloat. And I mean, I'll go back. Michael Cimino, Heaven's Gate, right? Like the biggest flop of movie, you know, Hollywood history. I think, you know, if you get too many resources, sometimes it can really bring about a lethargy, you know, with what you're doing, and a little bit of a bloatedness in what you're trying to say. And, you know, a lot of the set pieces that we did in the film, I know, and Chris, you know, you talked about this in the last interview, you know, a lot of what's on screen too feels very like balls to the wall and irreverent. And we didn't want to censor ourselves. So what was in the script was sometimes unachievable.
Right.
So you know, and one of the set pieces at the end of the film, and I won't spoil anything, but it involved so much in terms of just locations, and we were in the jacuzzi, and we were up here, and we were down here, and we were in this room. And I think what happened was we figured out a different way to block that scene where it ended up making some sort of closed loop sense. And that was a mini sequence in and of itself. And it felt tighter and it felt better for the story. So, you know, all this to say, yeah, I think that working on a limited budget yielded a lot of really positive results in a lot of ways.
Right. What is that? Necessity is the mother of invention.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And that's what's great, because the film is outrageous. I mean, let's be honest, it's outrageous. Right. Just the subject matter, the way it, you're welcome, the way it, you know, it, the way it all goes down. But it's not camp. It's not laughable. It's got a very serious undertone, even with its, you know, like you said, balls to the wall, the outrageousness of it. It's a serious film. I mean, I was not tempted to laugh one time. I was very invested in what was going on. It was just, it was really well done that way.
I think that's what our challenge was, you know, in terms of tone. You know, there are the characters say outlandish things and the audience does laugh. In a way, they're laughing out of relief almost, that it's not them a lot of the time. Yeah. And I think that tone was something that we played with, you know, and tinkered with right until the very end, because you do have to feel the weight of what has happened at the end when everything is flipped on its head and the whole movie is so colorful and bright and you're almost having fun with these people as they do these horrible things. Mm-hmm. And then the color is totally desaturated, and the world is totally emptied out. And we had to make sure that, you know, you felt that even if we're not, you know, even if we're not shouting that at you.
Right.
And that's a, you know, it's a magic trick that we set out to do from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm happy that you feel that way. And audiences that we've been showing it to, we've had test screenings and stuff and a few advanced screenings, they seem to be really getting it too. Mm-hmm. And we're incredibly grateful.
Well, that's amazing that you can do that just by, like you said, with the desaturation of the color, because it is real clue that it's like, shit just got real. I mean, it was real before, but it's really real now, because it's dark. This is going to be bad. And it's amazing what you can do with just like color, lighting, things like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And it's storytelling, you know,
we don't have CGI.
So, you know, that was one of the things. I mean, James is a complete aesthete. You know, the way little jokes and the crazy twists and turns of the story would never have been so impactful if that huge, incredibly important other element was not also added on top of it, that just elevated all of the material and brought the audience in even further into the world.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with horror, I find that if you have a moment of where you, like you said, you can laugh, or even if it just makes you snort, like if you've ever read, like, I don't know, like Stephen King, and then like something funny happens, you almost feel like, should I laugh? But it does, it gives you a break, because if it's too much, you get desensitized and then it's no longer having an impact. But that little laugh, that little moment of brevity, it kind of like takes you out and then puts you right back in. So it has an impact.
Yeah. 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 I think that was one of our goals too, is to have all of these different genres and different tones and different emotions play well together. It's incredibly difficult to do. And it took a long time to continue to kind of refine that as we went along. But yeah, I think that, and Jordan Peele does it so well too. And a lot of the great horror movies do. Scream, obviously, it's very disarming, because you're not sure how to feel next. But the real magic trick is, once you feel that thing right afterwards, it feels earned and not cheap. Right. Because you can play, you know, hey, oh, I have the 64 box of Crayola crayons and I can just put everything in it. Well, no, like, what's the order of the colors, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was something that we really worked hard to do because we knew we were going to draw from all these influences, but mm-hmm. how does it all play together? And that's the magic trick. And I think that's storytelling, you know, and that's music, that's, you know, film, TV, whatever it is, you have to keep the audience emotionally and interested and invested in the film like you're talking about, because if it's all one note, you can tune it right out. It's like white noise, put on noise cancellation headphones. So that was our kind of goal, was keep it rising and falling and changing and going in a completely different direction. And that was all in Chris's first draft. And we just kind of kept, you know, strengthening that and building on it.
Right. Absolutely. It's like in 13 Ghosts where, you know, just crazy, crazy stuff's been happening. And the one girl, I can't remember her name, she goes, "This basement." And Matthew Lillard goes, "Yes, this basement. If it was a neighbor's basement, I wouldn't give a shit." And I was like, ah. And then it's like, boom, right back into the ghost. And it's just so well done. It was so perfect. Perfect what you guys did.
13 Ghosts has one of the best commercials that I've ever seen. I was a kid and I wanted to see 13 Ghosts so badly because my parents wouldn't let me because the commercial was, this film is rated R for language, sex, violence, gore, blood. And I'd never seen that in a commercial before. And I remember, like, I would walk in, I would see that playing and my mom would look at me. She'd be like, "No, oh, come on." I mean, that is kind of like, you know, playing with that and getting audiences to see things on screen that you wouldn't normally see in real life, hopefully not, you know,
right.
is a thrill ride for most people. And we're very honored to do that.
Yeah, well, you would get every single one of those ratings.
Yeah.
The nudity, the language, the gore.
And we did.
There you go. There you go. You've come full circle.
Formative. Yes. Very, yes. Full circle.
I'm afraid to ask what your inspiration behind writing this was. Do you have a rich father?
No. None of the relationships in the film are based on my own actual relationships.
Good.
I have to say that. That should be a disclaimer, yeah. I think.
Not based on true events.
Not based on fictitious people.
Yeah, no. The most important thing about this, and I've actually seen this a lot with actually most fans of horror films
mm-hmm.
or slasher movies or whatever, they are the kindest, mm-hmm. most thoughtful, most endearing, and generous people that I've met of all the cinephiles. Like French film, you know, cinephiles, they're very cold. Mm-hmm. They don't, you know, they want nothing to do. But I've noticed that horror fans, and I think there's a real connection between the extremes on screen being almost kind of like where they go to like get their jollies out, and then the rest mm-hmm. of their life they don't need to you know, like I kind of love that. So but the inspiration just came from, I wanted to tell a story
mm-hmm.
You know, that was about a family that was based on, you know, films of the 90s or you know the 60s, and sort of a trio of characters that really wanted to manipulate each other and use each other to get these selfish ends mm-hmm. and what they would do to get that. And right. I always had this idea that if I was going to be, I've seen a lot of writer actors over the years, and I'm not going to name names, and I think it works for most of them, but they kind of write themselves as these exalted Christ-like figures almost that are so gifted and preternaturally talented, and they have everything going on. And I didn't think that that was something that I wanted to do. And I didn't think it would endear audiences to me at all. And I think what would maybe endear audiences to a character that I would play is someone that goes on a journey, but at the end, I don't know how to say it, but what that Tom Holland moment. Right. What that descent into hell, what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And crafting that was something that James and Adam, our lead producer, were rooting for because mm-hmm. they wanted to see that. And I think that was a really incredibly healthy sort of exercise that landed into a real you know, piece of entertainment that I, you know, is a really complete journey for the audience seeing the through the eyes of this character.
Yeah. And what I love about where we landed with the ending and how it's executed is it's also complicated. You know, I think I would hope that, you know, I do for the character and for the story, I feel such a range of emotion, you know, for how you feel about the character and the story and where everybody ends up. So I think that we tried to do that, you know, while also not being so aimless. You know, I don't think we wanted to make anything that was totally directionless, but I think that we really strove to make something complex, especially at the end. And hopefully, like when you leave the movie, like Chris, you were talking about, you know, there's all this fun stuff to look at that it's almost like it's a thin 80s star filter over the movie, right? And you're like, this is fun and it's pretty, and then it's like, oh man, like shit got real there, you know. And I feel something, right? I'm walking away with something that I might not have anticipated at the first third of the film, you know. Right. So
well, we've seen the concept of the older rich husband being murdered. We've seen it, but you took it this place. You got these three people, three very manipulative people who think that's a lot of things, that one they think they're working together, but in their own minds they're actually trying to stab each other in the back. And so you got that going on, and then you've got Georgie. You got him where he seems so cocky and self-confident and just, you know, but he's actually very broken, you know, and he's
craving validation. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's done these horrific things, as you know, they all have, but he's done these horrific things, but you don't, or at least me, I mean, I didn't hate him, you know, as it went along. I just couldn't hate him because I felt bad for him as well. Yeah. You brought like a sympathetic feel to him that came across.
So much. Thank you.
That's
attention.
Yeah. I mean, you're a horrible person, but I still feel, you know?
I think that's, you know, I've had the pleasure of working with Chris for a couple, you know, a number of years now, and he brought a natural charisma to everything that he's done. So that's a credit to him as a performer. But, you know, I remember we both love The Sopranos. I remember David Chase saying something about Tony kills somebody in episode 5. And he said in an interview, and I loved it, I'll never forget it. He said, an audience will go with a character as long as they're good at their job and they love their kids. They're a good parent and they're good at their job. Now, Chris didn't, George doesn't have a job or kids in the movie, but the parallel to it, I think, is that what we tried to do with George, as a character and giving him a character arc, is he wants something, and no matter how insignificant or vapid the audience might think his wants and goals are, if you give a character something that they care so deeply about, and it's so clear that the character of George cares so deeply about what he's looking to get, you inadvertently, right, root for him, right? It's almost not up to you, right? You kind of want to see that play out. And so I think that that's why you're really along for the ride with Georgie. So it was important to us to do that.
It works. It really does. So you said you came from a background in music, as in musical theater or music?
Oh, I think, did I mention that Chris and I both have musical backgrounds. We've made music in the past. I started as a music video director, you know, in town. We both obviously love music. So I think it informs both of our work in different ways because we have different disciplines, but I love pacing and I, you know, kind of almost do this when I'm behind the monitor and I'm watching the actors. And obviously it informed, I'll let Chris talk to it about it, but, you know, and he's from New York and he's so funny and quick, you know, and always has a quip and that's just, and it jumps off the screen. It's like electrifying to watch. And it was in his first draft of a script, you know, the dialogue had such a musicality, especially, you know, his character in Lux. So.
Right. There's definitely a rhythm in dialogue and in film, there's definitely a rhythm, and you can tell when it's not there because it seems very stilted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that we were very lucky with the actors we had as well. It would not have flowed, and that those rhythms that, you know, or like Eliza and I are the melody, and mm-hmm. Joe is like the harmony, or he's the kick drum or something. And mm-hmm. you know, all of it has to work together. And so the script, I know this is such a like thing to say, I don't even know what adjective to put, but it really did matter so, so much who was playing Lux and who was playing Joe. And, you know, our Ezra Buzzington, who played the lawyer, mm-hmm. you know, the way that he spoke to us in that scene, when we're at the reading of the will, the way that Riff Hutton, who plays the detective, the way he seems to be onto us, but maybe not, all of those ellipses that he added, you know, that's something that you can't teach. And when we saw it, most of the people who auditioned, it was like, oh, we found them. You know, it was as if they had walked in, and I didn't know what they would look like. I didn't know exactly what age range they would be in, really. But by the time, you know, we heard them, it was just so, we felt so lucky to work with all of them, to have that music in there, and that musicality and that rhythm.
Yeah, he was really good, the detective.
What a tightrope act the whole movie was. You know, we talked about all the balance of the tone and the genres and everything. And, you know, we worked with really experienced and skilled actors, you know, Riff and Ezra, like Chris mentioned, those guys have like such stacked IMDb resumes, you know, mm-hmm. and they come from TV, as Eliza does as well. And these guys, they hit their mark and they nail it, you know, and I'm like thinking, you know, Kubrick had Shelley Duvall do 80 takes of like coming out of the mansion, and I'm like ready to do that, right? Mm-hmm. And then like Eliza will hit her line, and I'm like, you know, I don't know, man. It's exactly how I had it in my head. I guess we need to move on. But
Eliza needed one take.
Yeah.
Only every time.
Yeah.
She's amazing. I absolutely love her.
Yeah.
She's incredible in this.
Yeah. And her wardrobe was,
that's we had a lot of fun. She, you know, our costume designer Coco Regal, you know, we'd worked with her before, and we were just like, Eliza's your Barbie doll,
mm-hmm.
and you know, she just knocked it out of the park. And Eliza wore the clothes didn't wear her,
mm-hmm.
and we every time she walked out of wardrobe you know, and the hair, you know, the extensions cascading down, she would walk different than when she arrived. You know, she became that character, and that character needed those clothes. It was her armor, you know.
Right. Didn't she wear heels like for close-ups and stuff? Yes. Like she was like, I need heels on, you know,
She wore the heels sitting down.
Right.
Yeah, she's absolutely stunning. She's absolutely stunning. Well, we're running out of time and I'm so sad, but tell me, it's on in theaters and video on demand on the 22nd. Yeah, now, is this nationwide theaters? Are you saying to the big cities?
It is in cities across the country.
Nice.
It is also all over. It's available on VOD though, everywhere. If you have an internet connection, you can rent this movie or buy this movie on Friday. Mm-hmm. It's available in Canada, Mexico, all the territories, the UK and Ireland, all on VOD starting Friday.
Even Ireland.
Oh, man.
Wow. You have made it, sir.
When we heard that, when that was on the table, we were like, we thought about this, one of the scenes in the film that uses a lot of British Parliament names.
Mm-hmm.
And we were so happy that they would be able to enjoy this across the pond as well. We feel absolutely very lucky.
It's fantastic. Is there a website for the film where people can get all the information, or just?
The website, I guess the best thing to do is follow the movie. The estate_movie on Instagram and Twitter, but there are all of these up-to-date things, and any device you're on, Apple TV, Roku, whatever, if you just search The Estate, you can find all the results there.
Alrighty. Yeah.
And you can, and what's cool is you can Google it too. There's, you know, and I'm sure this will be up on Google.
You can put
as well.
It in Fandango.
Absolutely.
All over the place.
Yeah.
Fantastic. It's been such a pleasure talking with you guys. And
likewise.
I'm not kissing your ass. I really, really thoroughly enjoyed the movie.
We're happy you did. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye. We appreciate it.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with James and Chris. The Estate film is in theaters nationwide as well as the United Kingdom. You can also purchase or rent The Estate on all major streaming platforms. Head on over to beunique.org. Like, follow, and support my beautiful humans over there. As for me, I am on all social media as Pup Duffy. And you can follow the show on Facebook, Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. For questions, suggestions, comments, feedback, you can email me at pup.ccc@gmail.com. And if you want to be a sponsor of the show like ThoroughClean, hit me up. As always, take care of each other, love each other, watch each other's back, and I'll see you next time.